Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. I want to remind you all that you can weigh in, let your voice be heard each and every weekday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on WKAR AM 870 by following me on Twitter at AlMartinWKAR, like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports, or even email me at almartin@wkar.org. Don't be shy. Hit us up. We want to hear what's on your mind. Of course, you know that you can always, always give us a call right here at the station and be heard right on the air by calling 517-355-9527. And how have you been enjoying the show so far? I encourage all of the dedicated Current Sports listeners out there to let us know what you like, don't like, and post some conversations that you would like to hear discussed right here on the show. Again, tweet me, Facebook me, or email me. And on today's Facebook page, we have posed a question concerning the whole Riley Cooper situation. Now, we want to know what your thoughts are on Riley Cooper saying the N-word at the Kenny Chesney concert. Do you think his punishment of being fined and being forced to attend a sensitivity class was enough? Now, for those of you who don't know, again, Riley, he's a wide receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles who was caught on tape last month, and it's just now resurfacing within the last few days. He was caught saying the N-word at a Kenny Chesney concert, and since the incident, everyone is talking about this and has weighed in on the incident. Now, we will talk about it here during our Current Sports section of the show. Again, leave a comment on our Facebook page or call us right here at the station at 517-355-9527. You guys have already on our Facebook page before the show even started when we put that out there and encouraging you guys to comment. We have about 6 or 7 comments to get to. And continue to let them come in. Let them come in because this is a definitely a touchy discussion, to say the least. All right, but we start off the show with a chat with Rob Gabrich. Now, Rob is a certified public accountant and certified financial planner. He's a financial sports planner as well and works with many professional athletes in helping them manage their money. Now, Mike Corey talked with Rob about how so many athletes end up falling into the trap of mismanaging their money, leading to many, many. And if you guys have seen the ESPN 30 for 30 documentary about why athletes are going broke, it is truly one of intrigue and one of that it just makes you scratch your head. So, again, Rob Gabrich, Mike sat down with him, and Rob started off telling us about how he actually got involved with certified financial planning in the world of sports.
Been doing, well, the majority of my career was mergers and acquisitions. And I have a CPA firm, and it actually, I got into money management, wealth advisory, and that type of thing, kind of out of the CPA firm. And I worked with pretty much business owners, attorneys, and that type of thing until it was about just over a year ago right now that I decided to dedicate myself to professional athletes, and it kind of spawned out of ESPN 30 for 30 broke episode about all these athletes that have made, you know, tens of millions of dollars and have gone broke. So basically thought, you know, these kids really, I mean, it's insulting, but it's kind of how it is. These young men are in need of somebody like me, not just somebody who's going to, you know, manage investments for them, but actually walk them through the whole cycle of financial. To me, the biggest problem is that they don't really understand how much it is. It's just significantly more than they've ever had. You know, some kids come from, you know, very, very poor backgrounds, and some don't. But I think they all are missing that understanding of what that money actually means. So the problem is that they're not educated about how much it is. They just think they're going to be wealthy. And, you know, I made a blog post most recently, and it was about potential versus actual wealth. So when they get out and they get these contracts, specifically in football, they're not guaranteed to get that money. An injury might take that income stream away from them. So to me, what I like to do is get them to have an understanding of how much money we're really talking about, and I walk them through a line-by-line budget. The minimum salary for NFL athletes that are part of the 53-man roster next year is $420,000 for the rookie. And I ask these kids when I sit down with them, is that, do you understand how much money you're going to have after tax? Because it's such a big deal. And, it, you know, you go from essentials, and we work from the top down. And right after taxes, the first item line I like to cover is their savings plan, what they need to set away, the whole cliche of pay yourself first. So let's get that money even out of your thinking before you get into these bad habits of spending. And then we go from what I would consider the less discretionary or the necessary expense items down to the fully discretionary type spending, and show them that these dollars, you know, are being spent, they're gone, and they're not coming back other than that savings line. The major problem is they don't understand exactly what they can afford to do.
So do you think, you were talking about, you know, the tax issue and how they could lose about almost half of their salary. Is that one of the big problems, that they're just spending more than they actually have?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, if you take a look at there was an article recently about Vince Young, and they're coming in and seizing his assets. This is a guy who's made tens of millions of dollars, and during the lockout, he took out a loan for $1.7 million. Well, this wasn't a loan to purchase any assets. It was to support his spending, that without his check, he doesn't have anything. So if he's not getting paid by the NFL, he still's got all these obligations that he obviously doesn't have any reserves to pay for. So taxes, sure. You got to understand that right away, that's gone. It's a huge chunk. It's never coming back. But it goes well beyond that.
One of the things you usually see about athletes is, you know, their support group when they're coming out into the pros, you know, and you hear some cautionary tales about how that you might get taken advantage of, you know, whether it's friends or family or people you just don't really even know trying to come after you for money. How do you go about trying to, you know, save their money from them in that aspect?
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right on with that. And, you know, not only does the athlete not understand how much money he's got, the people around him don't really either. So when I'm sitting down with these people is that, you know, some, you know, that have, you know, families that they want to support. There are some financial advisors that are, you know, get out there and say, I'll be the watchdog. You tell them to call me and I'll tell them no. I'll be the bad guy. Well, I don't necessarily believe that, because I don't think that an athlete has to divorce himself from his family. And in fact, you know, okay, where are these people going to be if you end up washing out of the NFL and you stiff-armed your entire family? So for me, it's a planning line in this. So there's an amount. If this is something that you want to spend your money on, my thing is like, well, let's get it out there. Maybe you don't drive as expensive of a car. Maybe, you know, you get a different apartment. But it's got to come from someplace. And the problem is that even the people around him just think, well, he's wealthy. He's in the NFL. I watch him on Sundays. Well, you know, that's not the way it is. So there's a lot of people that come with their hand out. And my thing is that, well, let's plan for it. If that's something that you want to do, let's plan for it where it makes sense for you.
So it'd be sort of like a payment plan type of situation, that they really do want to help out these people and do that?
Yeah. You know, we got it as a line item on the budget, you know, it's, you know, because maybe, you know, people come for their handout and it's, you know, $500 a month and now you're just done. So, you know, maybe we can make a list. It's like, okay, I want to pay for, you know, my friend's cell phone, you know, I want to pay for my mom's apartment or, you know, whatever it is. But we got to say, you know, there's a limit to it. The way I look at it and I describe it is that, you know, parasite will attach itself to a host, and when it's dead, it'll move on to something else. And my thing is that they're not parasites. Let's make sure that we don't kill the host or the goose with the golden eggs. You know, if we're going to plan for it, let's do it reasonably. The majority of them aren't going to be in the league for 3.5 years. I mean, or that's the average career. I mean, stats are different depending on what you look at. But my goal is that if we have a guy who's part of the 53, that, you know, we should have significant savings by the time he's at the end of his first contract, which is year 3. So off of that 250, you know, I honestly suggest that they put away $150,000 per year and only spend about 100, you know, at least through that first contract, until you can see significant more money. And it's about the education, because they don't want to, you know, be put out on the street. And hey, the fact is, you might have to go find a job, but, you know, what kind of flexibility can you get? Well, when you have savings, or what we start to describe as building up your net worth, and that's, you know, things that you have set aside that you don't necessarily need right now, it starts to give you choices. But when you have spending and all these obligations out there, and you must be making a check, you run out of choices really quick.
How is it you go about laying this foundation for how somebody spends their money? Sort of like just a basic foundation for, say, I'm an athlete just drafted out of college to play football. All right, I'm making, let's say, $800,000 this year. How would you go about laying out this foundation for me?
It's on a spreadsheet. You got it laid out month by month, and we show the cash in and the cash out. For example, NFL athletes will have their, they get a check per game. So they'll start earning their money in September, and they're done by December. So we have it out, 12 months, and we show how the money's coming in, the expected money going in, and what it is that you can afford to spend line by line on a spreadsheet.
And so do you see like a lot of maybe some problems or mistakes that are made mostly after that season's happened because they're not collecting that paycheck, after December is gone, and unless they're like in the playoffs or something, and they're not collecting that, weekly paycheck. And so is that where you see like a lot of problems with athletes that happens maybe in the springtime?
Absolutely. I've got friends that are agents, obviously. And they'll go back to their agent and ask them for money because they, during the season they manage to, spend a significant amount of money. And then before they get back into camp and start getting a camp check, they're out. So they're asking for their agent to give them a loan. So, yeah, it's a spending problem. And I'd like to think it doesn't happen to my clients, but things get crazy.
What are some of the very simple mistakes you see some of your clients have made in the past?
Quite simply, if they're not saving, that's the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. If they're going to go out there and spend everything they got, they just want to feel it out. If they don't start right away with that savings plan, they'll develop bad habits. They have to save. They got to pay themselves first, and they have to have an understanding that it's limited. It's limited to the next game check. Because you get hurt in the following game, you could get released. Yeah, I do, or I will work with them after their careers. And, they don't necessarily have to have a job, depending on the level of net worth. They might be a candidate to purchase a company. There are things, depending on the level of exposure that the athlete has, they might still have marketing opportunities. But in essence, they are retired. And that's why we need to be putting a lot of money away early in their careers, so we can sustain that retirement. It's not like they're retiring when they're 65 years old. They retire, certainly by the time they're 30, and they've got another 40, 45 years statistically to live off of what it is that they were able to generate. So if they're not able to do it, then, we search for other opportunities. They've had very bad advice from people around them. And getting bad advice is not the same as getting, decent advice. So, you could... Like in one of my videos, if you saw that, I said it's not, these guys aren't going broke because, they get bad investment advice. It's because of their spending problems. And it just amazes me that, some of my clients are, my business owners and my attorneys that I know are going to be working for quite a long time are truly wealthy people and still don't do some of the things that these athletes do. They don't buy a mansion based on your income from your check. To me, you got to associate that more with net worth. Buying a Bentley or a Rolls Royce. Is this really necessary? It blows my mind that these guys can even think that they can afford this stuff. There are also some very sad stories about family and friends who took advantage of them. They felt guilty, and they basically stole the wealth from these athletes, and my hope is that it's tragic that they're going broke. If they ending up with no money, even like Mike Tyson burned through $500 million. Geez, it's just not that complicated. You're not looking at something that is just insurmountable to understand what you can do to make sure this doesn't happen. It's really simple. Like I said, add zeros on my spreadsheet. We can work through it, but if you're going to keep showing up this negative month in and month out, you're short on cash, you're not building a net worth, which is what you need to be doing. So what hit me is just how ridiculous it is, and the fix is truly simple. I think it's rough. The big change is getting them to pay attention because they're athletes too. They're really into their sport, and they don't necessarily care what I have to say. So my hope is that, they are going to actually heed the advice and do what it is that I'm asking them to do. the basic thing, if they do nothing, and I sit down with, you know, I've talked with guys that are going to be seniors right now, is tell them, if you do nothing, at least get an understanding of this. If you don't choose me to be your advisor, just get this education. That is the basic thing. Again, it's not rocket science. They don't have a lot of time. You know, another thing I like to sell them is, you know, I'm going to be here for you so you can concentrate on being in your sport, but it is nothing that they can't do on their own. So the very basic thing is the education. Understand what's happening with your money. That's what they've got to do. That's what they all need. I don't care if it's Mike Tyson with $500 million or an undrafted rookie free agent that, you know, is going to make only $425,000 or $420,000. Just get that education, get that understanding. It's basic.
Yes, that was certified public accountant and certified financial planner Rob Gabridge. Rob aids athletes in the professional ranks on how to manage their money. Very interesting discussion. Thanks, Mike, for bringing that to us. And it's so interesting because if you look at that ESPN 30 for 30 documentary and to see, it really opened my eyes because to see the amount of athletes and high premier athletes, too. I mean, we're talking about guys who really had a lot of success at the professional ranks in sports. Many of them filing for bankruptcy due to numerous reasons, some of those reasons that you just heard throughout that interview. And, you know, if you got any comments on athletes on why they do go broke, again, you can give us a call right here at the station, 517-355-9527. And, again, just to remind you all that we will be discussing the whole Riley Cooper N-word situation right here on Current Sports. We're going to dive into Current Sports and then get into that right after the break. Again, give us a call, 517-355-9527, or leave us a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or you can always tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Again, stick around. We got a lot more to talk about. More Current Sports is right around the corner.
Computers are running our cars. Is hacker carjacking inevitable? I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for a look under the hood to see how hackers could gain control of your car. Plus a dinosaur whose brain knows how to fly. Yeah, it's all on Science Friday from NPR.
That's Science Friday coming up at 2 p.m.
Seven days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat.
To be able to start a farmer's market takes time and energy, people power, and planning.
We change the notes, or we change the phrasing, or we change something for what might happen, and you can't really predict, and that's the beauty of jazz.
We are reinventing city government as we go along. It's like redesigning the airplane while in flight.
Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 WKAR.
Hey, good people, welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. It's now time for Current Sports, giving you all of the sporting news concerning the good people of Mid-Michigan. And we want to remind you all, we'll be taking your calls right now. That's right, 517-355-9527. We'll talk about anything that's on your mind. Well, let's dive right into the topics. I'm also joined by intern Mike Corey and production assistant Alex Sharg as we go through these topics really quick. All right, Curtis Blackwell, Michigan State will hire Sound Mind, Sound Body founder Curtis Blackwell as its full-time recruiting coordinator. Now, multiple sources are indicating this yesterday. It's coming out. It's not official yet, though. Chatter, though, and it's coming out that Curtis is the top candidate. Now, an MSU spokesman said that the school is not yet ready to announce the hire, but Blackwell, who did not immediately return a call to his mobile phone yesterday, is a Detroiter who played college football at Hampton and he has coached high school football and worked for the NCAA in Indianapolis. Now, he runs the popular Sound Mind, Sound Body campus, camps, in Southfield, Michigan, and Washington, D.C. They serve as really great scouting opportunities for college coaches and seminars in football and life outside the game for players. Now, MSU, of course, is adding this full-time recruiting coordinator position, as we told you here on Current Sports last week, and it is yet to be officially named. Mark D'Antonio said, kind of hinted toward this last week in Chicago, that they were going to do this. Now, thanks to extra funding for the football program, which sees now an additional $4 million for this upcoming football season, allowing them to really add this position. And D'Antonio said this is a necessary step to keep MSU competitive. Now, the recruiting coordinator or director of scouting, as they would put it, will not be a coaching position, just strictly centered on recruiting those recruiting individuals coming right out of high school and trying to get them to play for the MSU football squad. So Curtis Blackwell, his name looks to be atop that list. All right, D'Antonio, sticking with the MSU football team, Mark D'Antonio. He actually spent an entire day, a full day of national coverage over at ESPN. Now, one of the highlights of this whole thing was when D'Antonio took a trip through ESPN's car wash on Thursday during the Scott Van Pelt show on ESPN Radio, talking about rivalries. Now, Van Pelt is a proud Maryland grad, and he really compared the MSU-Michigan football dynamic to that of the Duke-Maryland basketball rivalry, without actually naming Michigan, though. Van Pelt said, quote, "I've always felt sort of a kinship to Michigan State, and I'll explain why. Maryland, I always wondered, who is our rival? I know who Maryland looked at and said, we want to beat you, but I always felt like somehow or another they always had some other person they wanted to view as more important. And I feel that, to a degree, Michigan State lives in that world where you've got people you really want to beat, and do they view you in the same fashion? Is that at all an accurate representation that you feel like, not that you have to fight for respect, but that rivalries aren't always reciprocal," end quote. Now, D'Antonio, during this point when Scott Van Pelt brought that up, D'Antonio was a little uneasy, a little heated, if you will. And, well, I wouldn't use the word heat. I wouldn't go that far, but it definitely more alarmed, I would say. Coming back saying, quote, "I think, first of all, rivalries are great for college football. I don't know if I answered your question or not, but I think you either grow up green or you grow up blue in that state. You ask a 10-year-old, they pretty much have their mind made up at that point. So it is important to us. I really don't care whether it's important to them or not. It's important to us, and that's what counts." And Van Pelt kind of cleaned up, I guess he sensed that, you know, D'Antonio was getting a little bit uneasy and said, quote, "Amen, because, see, I've always viewed it that way." So interesting when you look at it with Michigan and Michigan State. Of course, Michigan State is always, definitely been known as the little brother in this rivalry, I guess you could say. And if you talk to many Michigan fans, they would say that, you know, Michigan State, yeah, it's a rivalry, but not as big as that of a Ohio State, if you will. So this is always a point of discussion. And D'Antonio, you can rest assured that he definitely looks forward to Michigan the most out of any team on his schedule and wants to beat them. So, but yeah, D'Antonio, he spent all day at ESPN doing interviews. He was on SportsCenter, of course. As I just said, he was on Scott Van Pelt show. He was on the blog earlier in the morning. Really good to get his name out there and get to Michigan State out on the national map, and to get D'Antonio's face out there. It's good to see him. You know, D'Antonio is a guy who, you know, he's the leader of this franchise. He's the face of that franchise, and to see him on national likes like that of ESPN is great to see. I hope he does it more. All right, USA Today's Top 25. Now, the USA Today released its preseason Top 25 yesterday, and no surprise here, Alabama was ranked number one, receiving 58 of 62 first-place votes. Ohio State is number two, receiving 3 first-place votes, followed by Oregon, Stanford, and Georgia. Now, the Johnny Manziel-led Texas A&M Aggies are ranked 6th and got the last remaining first-place vote. Now, following the Aggies is South Carolina, Clemson, Louisville, and Florida, rounding out the top 10. Now, other notable teams making the top 25 is Michigan. They come in at 17. Notre Dame, who we saw getting pummeled in the national championship game, they are 11th. And Big Ten foe Nebraska at 18. Now, MSU did not make the top 25, but received enough votes to place at 28th. And, you know, just a lot of anger when this came out. It actually came out during our show yesterday, and I was just looking through tweets and Facebook messages. A lot of people angry that Michigan State did not crack that top 25. But in all honesty, guys, I'm not surprised. Are you surprised? I'm not.
I'll tell you what I'm surprised at. I'm surprised that they even got 28th, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in any way because, sure, there have been a lot of improvements made from the offensive side of the ball. Hopefully there'll be more of a solidified quarterback. But after and now we were talking about this earlier, after their, 500 record and not really meeting up to expectations, and they lost two key pieces to their team, there's no reason why they should be in the top 25, right now, at least.
Yeah, I totally agree. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, it's not a surprise to me at all. I mean, when you lose three of your big targets in Bell, Golston, and Sims, and you pretty much failed in a year where you were a perennial Big Ten favorite, coming into next season, it's not a surprise at all that you're not going to be ranked. Just take that, with a grain of salt, and then just prove yourself. This is a coach's poll. The coaches don't think you're good enough to be in the top 25. Prove yourself now. This is the time to show that.
I totally agree with you guys on that. And, and like you said, when you look at MSU, I think defensively they bring it every single year. If it's anything that MSU's football is consistent with, it's defensively. Narduzzi does a great job. A lot of people were definitely going after him to possibly take another or higher up job, if you will, in the past. But, MSU's defense is going to be there. But, again, that offense with the quarterback situation right now, it's really – of course, I think Andrew Maxwell will be the starter. But, there's definitely a battle there. There was definitely a battle there at some point, trying to find a solidified quarterback who they can feel confident with. And then receivers. And then, you mentioned – Le'Veon Bell now going to the NFL, who was their offense last season. Let's face it. I mean, they would hand him the ball, more than anything. And, now he's gone. That's a big hole in the offense. It raises a lot of question marks. So, people, let's be real out here. I'm a realist. I'm graduated from MSU, but at the same time, I'm a realist. And it's not surprising to me that they're not in this top 25. So we'll see what happens, though. Again, like you said, Mike, they got to use this as a rallying point and say, hey, all right, you don't think we're good enough? Let's go out here and prove it. So, all right, former Detroit Red Wings star Nicholas Lidstrom, he will have his number 5 jersey retired in a ceremony next season. So congrats to Nicholas Lidstrom. The Red Wings announced yesterday that Lidstrom will be honored before a March 6th game against the Colorado Avalanche. Lidstrom retired last year after a career in which he won 4 Stanley Cups in Detroit. He was a 7-time winner of the Norris Trophy, which goes to the league's best defenseman, and he was named captain of the Red Wings before the 2006-2007 season after Steve Yzerman retired from the team and when Detroit beat Pittsburgh in the 2008 finals. He became the first European-born captain to lead his team to a Stanley Cup. So Lidstrom will now have his number 5 lifted in the rafters of the Joe Louis Arena, along with the likes of Yzerman, Gordie Howe, and terrible, quote-unquote, terrible, Ted Lindsay. So congrats to Nicholas Lidstrom. Very well-deserving. And A-Rod, the Alex Rodriguez sole biogenesis fiasco. A lawyer for the New York Yankees, Alex Rodriguez, and Major League Baseball officials reportedly negotiating a settlement deal that will result in a lengthy suspension for the 3-time MVP instead of a permanent ban. Now, today, it was announced that negotiations between A-Rod and the Major League Baseball are reportedly stuck on Rodriguez's desire to make sure he can cash in on at least some of the remaining $100 million on his contract, and there's also a wide gap between the suspension he is willing to accept and the one MLB would like to issue. Now, two sources familiar with the talks told ESPN's Outside the Lines this. Now, Rodriguez's representatives repeatedly have said he will fight any suspension. And, if you look at A-Rod, back in the day, and he's one of those guys, kind of compare him to a whole Ryan Braun type of personality in this regard that, back in the day, he definitely denied. Well, just listen.
Going back to 2001, my cousin started telling me about a substance that you could purchase over the counter in DR known as, in the streets, is known as Boli or Bole. It was his understanding it would give me a dramatic energy boost and otherwise harmless. My cousin and I, one more ignorant than the other, decided it was a good idea to start taking it. My cousin would administer it to me, but neither of us knew how to use it properly, providing just how ignorant we both were. It was at this point we decided to take it twice a month for about 6 months during the 2001, 2002, and 2003 season. We consulted no one and had no good reason to base that decision. It was pretty evident that we didn't know what we were doing.
A-Rod, you knew what you were doing. You knew what you were doing, A-Rod. Let's be honest here. But, yeah, that was back in 2003 when he claims that he didn't know what he was doing. He was just taking it, just unknowingly knowing that the substance was banned. So now he's definitely in a situation where he will, let's be honest here, he will be banned for quite some time. He's just trying to get some of that moolah, which is a lot of moolah, $100 million we're talking about. $100 million we're talking about here. I doubt that he will see any of that, though. But we'll see as this goes on. Now, it's reported that this whole Biogenesis investigation will come to light today. And names were supposed to be released today. It's still early. It's only 1:30 right now. So we will see if that happens. If not today, maybe tomorrow. Soon. We know it's coming soon. And we know that many players will be on that list. And this is very disturbing, though. When you look at this whole Biogenesis investigation, it gets more and more disturbing, seemingly, as the days go by. ESPN is reporting that Biogenesis had numerous high school clients outside of Major League Baseball and other professional athletes. The report claims that teams were given HGH, testosterone, and other performance-enhancing substances by, quote, Dr. T. That's the doctor's name, better known as Anthony Bosch. Of course, from the Biogenesis Clinic. Now, the teens involve 10 Miami high school baseball players and possibly others from the Southeast Florida area. Now, the Biogenesis Clinic has still not been released, but could be released by today. How disturbing is this, guys? You have teenagers taking steroids. And, you know, when you look at this report, if you look at the video that I showed you guys before we started, I showed Alex this. The parents were driving them. It's reported that the parents were driving them to this clinic knowing that they were going to get HGH and testosterone. Are you kidding me? What is wrong with this country?
It just shows that parents will do whatever necessary to make sure their child performs well, or maybe their parents have a goal in mind that my child can't do it on his own, and if I really want my child to get to the NBA or get to the MLB, he needs to get some performance-enhancing drugs.
They're trying to get that moolah, too, huh?
I think so. That's the only thing I can think of.
That's sad. It's really sad.
Do you agree? What do you?
I totally agree. I definitely agree with you. I could see some parents out there who see a lot of potential in their kid and who are willing to, if they can get away with it, who are willing to do whatever it takes in order to make sure that their child performs at the best of their ability so that they possibly have a chance at playing in the majors. And it's really disturbing when you have that. And you talk about a kid taking HGH and testosterone. Is that even safe at 16 or 17 years old to be taking something like that in your body? I don't know. It's just really disturbing, and it shows you in society how we're willing to do whatever it takes to get to that mountaintop. And you know, stuff is really starting to hit the fan now. Now, they have tried to contact some of the high schoolers and some of the parents. They have not really responded, but I'm sure this is going to get really ugly. It's really ugly right now. It's going to get uglier, especially with this.
The funny thing is there are many high school athletic trainers a part of the programs, and I'm pretty sure there has to be a couple of them outside of the Biogenesis Clinic who maybe administer some kind of performance-enhancing drug, too. You never know.
Yeah.
So think about all the high schools with athletic trainers. This is just an independent clinic.
Right.
There are many trainers that probably have administered some kind of drugs. It may not be an illegal PED, but maybe it's not the best for, you know, in high school. That's a whole other issue.
Yeah, definitely a whole other issue. You got anything, Mike?
I think it's a part of a bigger problem that we have. It's, you see, these kids have probably are very impressionable, and they see, you know, they're getting caught with now. You see people like Ryan Broad and A-Rod, you know, get away with it. And they go through heads, oh, they get away with it. It's going to be okay if I do it. And now it's getting caught up with them now, but, you know, there's a time, you know, 2003, A-Rod, it came out that A-Rod did it, didn't get punished. Ryan Braun got off on a technicality when he was faced with this kind of charges. So these, it's in these minds, kids' minds that it's okay.
Yeah, and you know, when I look at it, and I go back to the discussion that we had on Barbershop Wednesday a while ago, when you talk about athletes as role models, are they and whatnot, whether they like it or not, they are. And when a kid turns on ESPN and sees an A-Rod or, you know, any baseball, I'm just talking about baseball right now, or sees these athletes taking these performance-enhancing drugs, these are their heroes. This is who they look up to. This is who they want to play like. And if they see them doing it, some of them may say, hey, why not? You know, my hero's doing it, and look where he's at right now. Why not I try it? You know, and it sends a bad message. And it's really appalling because, of course, a kid being that young, they may not know. I mean, they're still trying to find themselves and maturing as an adult. But the parents should know. And that's what's really disturbing for me. When you talk about parents driving their kid to this clinic to meet Dr. T, Anthony Bosch, and to take these drugs.
And that's where I'm going to argue with you, because I think they do know. I can almost bet that they have some knowledge about how harmful steroids are. No, the parents.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what makes it so disturbing. That's what makes this whole story disturbing. Because these parents should know, and you know the kid may not know because they're young. They're still maturing.
Oh, the parents should know. Okay.
The parent. That's what I'm saying. This makes it so disturbing because the parents, they know this is not right, and yet they're still going out there and doing it. You know. Disturbing stuff. All right. Aaron Hernandez was contacted recently by a fan of his by the name of Carl, who said he was an inmate in the same jail 15 years ago. Now, Hernandez replied to the letter and said he can't wait to sign autographs when he returns to the game and he is innocent. Of course, Aaron Hernandez is a former player of the New England Patriots now, who is now being accused in the death of on trial right now for the death of Odin Lloyd. Now, he wrote that in the letter, quote, "I know God has a plan for me and something good will come out of this. I've always been a great person and known for having an amazing heart," end quote. He then signed the letter and then wrote, "Can't wait to sign this again when I'm playing again and prove all the haters and down talkers wrong," end quote. Now, divers spent 8 hours on Monday at Pine Lake in Bristol, Connecticut, looking for the suspected weapon in the killing of Odin Lloyd. And the next day, they spent more hours, over 24 hours spent in that lake trying to look for the suspected weapon, which is a .45 caliber Glock right now. I don't believe they found it just yet, but interesting letter. So Aaron Hernandez is definitely sticking by his guns, saying that he is innocent. Only time will tell. We live in a country where you are innocent until proven guilty. But I tell you, this evidence does not look good against Aaron Hernandez. All right, guys, let's get to the biggest story, I guess you could say. And it's really amazing that this story is has gotten so much press as it is. But, you know, when you look at the dynamics of it, I can see where many people are coming from. But on a video published Wednesday on crossingboard.com, Riley Cooper, who is a wide receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles, he was caught using a racial slur in a confrontation with an African-American security guard at a Kenny Chesney concert in June. Now, in a video that has gone viral, Cooper said, quote, "I will jump that fence and fight every N-word here, bro," end quote. So, he has been fined an undisclosed amount, and he has also made his apologies.
"I'm extremely embarrassed, extremely hurt, I'm extremely sorry for my actions. I wanted to come up and tell you guys that. I've talked to Mr. Lurie, I've talked to Howie Roseman, I've talked to Coach Kelly, and explained to them the whole situation. And I'm willing to accept any consequences. Once again, I'm extremely sorry."
So again, that is Riley Cooper. After the video went viral of him saying, I quote, "I will jump that fence and fight every N-word here, bro," end quote. That was at a Kenny Chesney concert. And it's just recently, I believe in probably like 45 minutes ago, that the Eagles have they've cut ties with them right now, I believe. Am I saying that right? I believe they
It said that he was excused
from team activities or something.
Yeah,
right?
he's just taking a period of time away from the team, just like a break. No one knows how long, but just a break from activities. It hasn't been formally released or anything like that.
Yeah, well, it says right now that he's left the Eagles to undergo counseling after using the racial slur. Again, they have fined him, and they've also said that he must go for sensitivity training and counseling. So he is being excused from team activities right now and is undergoing that punishment. Now, Commissioner Roger Goodell said that the league can't take further action because the collective bargaining agreement prevents a player from being penalized by his team and the NFL. And on Wednesday, again, if you just heard this, after this all came out, after the video surfaced, Cooper apologized on Twitter and to his teammates. And it's really interesting when you talk about this, because this is something, you know, anytime you talk about the N-word, it's a very, very touchy topic, you know, especially for me because I am an African-American. And if you look at the Eagles, more than half of that team is African-American, which really, really does not bode well for team chemistry when you talk about Riley and you talk about the Eagles. Specifically, one of those teammates, LeSean McCoy, he said yesterday that, like Michael Vick, he forgives Riley Cooper for his use of a racial slur, but that it has changed his relationship with the wide receiver, who he had considered a friend. He says, quote, "I forgive him. We've been friends for a long time." And he also went on to say, "But in a situation like this, you really find out about someone just on a friendship level. I can't really respect someone like that," end quote, which I personally totally agree with Riley. Now, on our Facebook page, we have asked you to comment on this story. And just to read a few of those comments from Justin Murdoch, he says, "I think his real punishment is going to come when he gets on the field against his opponents," end quote. That's very true. Joseph Peralt says, "Should he have said it? Of course not. But his teammates saying they will never talk to him is a joke. They say that word to each other every day 1,000 times. If the words offend you in one form, you shouldn't be saying it in another form." Ashley Perry says, "It's interesting how people make such a big deal about people using the N-word, but fail to acknowledge other racial slurs like Redskins, which is offensive to Native Americans, and the name of an NFL team. We pretend it's okay for someone to say it as long as you have more melanin in your skin or if you're rapping about it to make millions. I'm so over it. At the rate that blacks use it to refer to each other, I don't see what's the big deal anymore. I don't like it, so I don't use it. If you don't like it, stop using it, and other people will follow." I could go on and on. You guys have definitely expressed your opinion on this very, very touchy situation. And, you know, guys, when I look at this situation, for me, first of all, it's very surprising to see how much this press has gotten. Riley Cooper, especially for him being a Caucasian and saying this word, if you look at the N-word, as historically, it's probably the nastiest word that you can say to someone. I think historically, and looking at the history that it has behind it, it's a very nasty word. And for me, it hits home for me because growing up where I grew up in Detroit, in the inner city, and a lot of my friends are African American, you know, and even to this day, if you look at blacks, they use the N-word as a greeting. And in my opinion, I don't use the word at all. I think that it's highly offensive, and I don't think anyone should use the word. And Riley Cooper coming out and using this word, and it was caught on camera using the word. And this one, another thing I want to get to, because, you know, and you live in society, and we talked about this countless times, where you're, as an athlete, you're constantly on that stage. You're constantly in the public eye. You have to watch what you do and say. And he was caught saying this word, a word that is highly, highly offensive, probably the most offensive racial slur, you can argue, in the American language. And it's a nasty word, but at the same time, if we're going to hold Riley Cooper accountable, I think we have to hold everyone accountable. And that's rappers out there who use it. That's other African-American individuals out there who use it, because let's be honest. I mean, If you go to Detroit right now, where I'm from, you will probably hear that word used tons of times, 20 to 30 times, in African Americans greeting one another in the presence of whites many times. And, you know, when white people see that, or any race sees that coming from a certain culture, a word that is supposed to offend that race, and they're using it to greet one another, that kind of opens the door for a hot can of mess. And I think if we're going to hold Riley Cooper accountable, we have to hold every individual out there accountable who uses this word. So I definitely do agree with Ashley Perry. And, you know, this is one of those things where definitely fine Riley Cooper. As far as him being suspended games, I don't know if we could go that far. I don't know if we can go that
far.
Yeah,
now let's also talk about how he said it. Was it an ER ending or was it just an A ending?
And that's a discussion I want to get to as well, because when you look at this word, and this has constantly been a discussion in many Black Power rallies. I actually did a program on this when as far as my fraternity is concerned back in college. The use of the N-word. Now, there are different contexts on using it, and it all depends on how you use it when you talk about its offense in regards to the African-American community. When the context where Riley Cooper used it was the ER ending, which, and a lot of people will argue with me with this, saying it doesn't matter if it has an ER ending, if it has the A ending, they will argue and say it's the same thing, which I do think is the same thing. But African-Americans feel it takes more weight when you use the ER, because that's the stem. That's the foundational word and spelling and pronunciation of what offended blacks for so many years during slavery. And for him to use that as a white man, to use that word, hit a lot of individuals who are black very wrong. And especially with the Eagles, because, I mean, you got more than half of your team is African-American. They know the context of that word. When African-Americans, like I said, are greeting with each other with this word, it has the A ending. It's in, and like I said, for me, no matter how you say it, it's the same word to me. But over time, it has been coerced and converted into something that's totally different compared to the ER ending, which I don't totally agree with. That's to each his own, to tell you the truth. So for him, in the context of what you use it, I mean, he's not, even if he was using it as, like I said, as a term of greeting, that's totally different, because he used it in a negative context. The context of what he said, the word was in violence, and he's trying to whoop somebody's butt, and he said the word. So that was in a negative connotation. So it's really sticky. It's really sticky, guys. I don't know. I just had to get that off my chest, because I don't feel as though anyone should be saying the word.
No, you hit on a lot of great points, especially the point that he said it with an ER ending. That's different than a normal greeting. You're kind of mocking the word, you know, when African-Americans greet each other. It's more of a mocking of the word. Yeah, I mean, that's what you told me, you know, before we went on the air.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely agree that it's definitely something that we have to lock down on. Is it going to be just Riley? Is this going to be more of a wide-scale thing? Are you going to maybe make rules in the locker room? You can't say any explicitives in the locker room. But we all know it's still going to go on regardless. People will still do what they do. People will still take PEDs regardless if they crack down or not. So I just don't think there's an end of sight to this issue.
No, not at all.
It's hard for me. I'm not going to say much on this, because I'm not going to know what it's like to be offended by that word. This is a whole thing for you, maybe, but I'm not going to know what it's like to be offended
right.
by that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so for me, I
see some overreaction. And maybe the media, and just like maybe take it, like just see, yeah,
well,
fine.
I wouldn't
not,
say
not,
if
not, it's... not overreaction. Him use absolutely, like how you said, like the ERA ending is the word. Don't say it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but again, I really can't. I'm not gonna know what it's like to be offended by it. So I really don't know what to say.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a very touchy topic. Again, it hits home for me, because there are many individuals. This word is an historical word that holds a lot of weight and rubs many people the wrong way because of its history. And, you know, when you have a teammate, I'm putting myself in the shoes of Riley Cooper's teammates on that team. If I'm his teammate, I kind of have the same views as LeSean McCoy. His true colors came out in that 5 seconds. You know what I mean? His true colors. We saw his true colors there. This is a word. It came out so easily. If you look at the video, it came out so easily. He's definitely used his word before. And looking at that and being his teammate who happens to be black, if you're a black teammate on, if I was a member of that team, and looking at that and looking at that video in that moment is something that you really can't take back. You know, because it came out so fluently, it came out so easy. Mm-hmm. It's like you can backtrack and say, okay, I apologize, you know, I'm sorry, I regret this. But at the same time, it makes you wonder, how long has he been saying this word? And it came out so easily, like it was water. It just flowed
so
out of
easily,
his mouth.
Which makes me wonder now, since it's kind of awkward, there's nothing he can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen in the year? Is this going to be something that takes place in the locker room? Is there?
I don't think it. Out of Riley Cooper's mouth, I don't think this is ever taking place.
Again. What I mean is this silence treatment? Are they going to treat him differently? Obviously they're going to hit him harder on the field. That's evident.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But what I'm wondering is, would you even be comfortable as the Philadelphia Eagles having him with your locker room? Because there's a whole point of a team comes with. You know, molding together. There's. I'm trying to think of the word for it. I mean, same with MLB locker rooms, same with NBA locker rooms. There's that charisma in the locker room. There's the happiness in the locker room that is essential for everyone being in the right mood that helps performance. You know, if you have a really good locker room, you get along with a lot of the guys, it's safe to say that it may help your performance on the field. Now, will that be a healthy locker room? Absolutely not.
No, now with Riley Cooper.
And as a general manager, you have to make that call. Is he a detriment to the benefit in the future of our locker room? So, do you think he will be?
Without a doubt.
Right. So what I'm going to argue is, you must get rid of Riley Cooper, because I think his career honestly is a little bit ruined, a little tarnished
by 5 seconds.
They're not in a position right now to do it. They lost Jeremy Maclin for the year. They're not in a position.
Of course,
right,
they're
now
not in a position.
But at the same time, though, I think with something like this, like Alex said, I mean, chemistry is so important with a team.
Yes, exactly. And until they're able to find a replacement, they're not going to get rid of him. Until they take a risk and sign Ocho Cinco, or somebody else in free agency. You know, they just released B.J. Cunningham, I think, I think he's with the Eagles. Just released him the other day. They're already hemorrhaging some wide receivers. They really can't get rid of him at this point right now.
Yeah.
Detriment,
I think what Alex is talking about from a locker room perspective, chemistry, weighs heavily.
I get that. I'm thinking of a front office perspective, which is they're not going to get rid of him because they don't have anybody else.
I think if they start really – it starts becoming really noticeable that, hey, they don't want to play with this guy, or it starts to really become bad, because this is a very situation when you talk about this. I could see him possibly being released. I don't know. Yeah. You never know. This is a different situation. That's really never. I've never seen a story like this. Mm-hmm. But really, thank you for everyone that left a comment on this. We would definitely read a few more of these over the weekend when you can just soak and think about it some more. I'm sure this will be definitely a topic of discussion for days and days. As we approach the bottom of the hour, we just want to leave you. I'm sure a lot of you are going to, we haven't forgot about you golf fans out there. Max Rebner, our golf pro at Timber Ridge, he's going to give you some tips on some golf etiquette.
When I hit my shot into the green, so shots that come in high at a steep angle, they kind of leave a mark, you know, on the green. And these little tools, you can use it, you know, you see these. For all the viewers, you know, you see these, I don't know, it kind of has teeth marks. The proper technique to fix a ball mark, so you see the indentation, you see the mud beneath the grass. The key is to push the outer parts of the grass inward. So some people, they tend to dig it in and try to lift, and that's actually the wrong, because you're actually uplifting the root. It actually kills the grass. So you want to work your way around, starting with the higher side of the dent in the green, and you just sort of push it back a little bit towards the center, and you just start working your way around, slowly pushing the outer edges of the grass into the middle, and then you just use your putter, tap it down, and it's almost like new. That's the difference.
Wow.
So a mark like that, fixing it properly, this will be healed in the next 3 to 5 days. Leaving it how it was, it'll take weeks to repair. So
weeks compared to days.
Yep.
Unbelievable. I've never done that before. I need to. I'm bad.
And
man,
if you don't have a tool, you can use a tee. I mean,
use a tee. Okay.
Use a tee. Just do the same thing. Poke around the edges, pushing it in. Tap it with your putter. You're doing the course a service. So
there you go.
We appreciate it. I appreciate it as a head pro. So
right. Nice.
So that's how you fix a ball mark. So we appear to have some people behind us waiting on our segment right now. This is a lesson in how to golf etiquette. If you're in a slow group, you always have the ability to say, come on and play through. And that way they get a chance to get ahead of our slower group doing our TV segment.
Yep. Golf etiquette 101.
Gotta love that golf etiquette 101. You learn how to just let players play through. If you're a golfer who's just starting off and you're really not that good, you know, you may be saying, go let them play through a lot. I know I was when I first started playing. But also, just want to end on a positive note, if you will. Right now, it's being noted that a Detroit Tigers scout, I believe, right, Mike? Yeah, he's raising money.
From what I just read, is like a talent scout is going to pick up the tab on for James Van Horn, the Eat 'Em Up Tigers guy. He's gonna pick up the tab and pay
for his casket.
For his casket, yeah. And casket has like a pinstripe suit with the tiger orange tie and with the. I don't have the article.
That's a great story.
Yeah, definitely a great story.
Positive, but. Of course. Those who don't know who Van Horn was, he was James Eat 'Em Up Tigers Van Horn, who was at every single Tigers game with the Hulk fist and really just cheering on the Tigers. And also Dreadlock Mike was there, who was in a wheelchair. Just about every Tigers game, if you went to a Tigers game, you definitely know those two. They were sadly killed in a hit and run last weekend, tragically. So two individuals who are definitely so important to the Tigers atmosphere, they are now gone. So that's a great story. Thanks, Mike, for showing me that. But all right, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Alex Sharp and Matt Lucky, our production assistants. Intern Mike Corey, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to Max Rebner for that great tip on golf etiquette, and Rob Gabrich for being a part of today's show. Man, interesting stuff. Again, we'll continue this whole Riley Cooper situation next week. Have a fantastic weekend. TGIF, folks. The week just flies by. You can listen to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. Hey, take care and be easy, people.